Hi, I'm Kylie.
And I'm Elliot.
We're hosts of Bad Dad, Rad Dad, a Snack Labs podcast where we look for better dads one movie at a time. Every week, we talk about the movies we watched, the thoughts and feelings they brought up in us, and the best and worst dads we found in them.
Our weekly movie picks can span decades, genres, languages, and more. Plus, we keep it totally spoiler-free so you can discover movies that you want to watch.
So join us every Thursday on our silly little movie journey to hear about the movies we watched that week.
And the dads they made us wish we had. Because
my dad's dead.
And my dad's a deadbeat.
But as far as we're concerned,
not all dads have to be bad.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
What was that?
I was moving a chair.
Ah, oh, okay. Sounded like you were dying for a second.
Wait, should I be muting you on my phone?
I don't know, babe. Fuck's sakes. All right.
I mean, muting my microphone on our phone call.
What?
Okay, so I'm talking to you right now into a microphone attached to my computer.
Yes, okay.
But I'm also... Oh, no, because then you won't be able to hear me.
Right. So, listen. Fuck. You need to be able to hear me, okay?
I can hear you.
Okay, great. I need to be able to hear you. All right, the computer also needs to hear you through your recording. So
we're good to go is what you're saying.
Sure. Now, if my voice is being picked up on your mic, then you need to turn me down to the lowest amount possible so that you can still hear me, but it's not loud enough that it's being picked up on your side.
Uh-huh.
Holy fuck. When are you home?
Oh, really, really, really soon. Like, I hope I'm going to get home before I go to PEI, but... Yeah.
Okay. Well,
like next week.
Great.
Next week.
Great.
Yeah. Next week.
I cannot wait because this. I mean, there's a lot of it. You being gone, that's infuriating. But holy moly.
But you know what?
What
is really infuriating is when you're like, I know that I already know how to do this, or I know that this thing is like common sense, or like I know that I know I'm doing every step I'm supposed to do to achieve my desired outcome, and like
right.
It doesn't work maybe 20% of the time, and that's when I go, hey, this thing doesn't work, and someone's like, you're bad at that thing, and it lasts forever. So my like tech, like, you know, people, someone's like, you're forgetful enough times and you become very forgetful. I know.
Right.
I know I'm bad at this stuff, but it's only because it's what's expected of me.
I don't know. Really think that? Do you think it's what's expected of you?
Or
do you think it's your attitude towards those things where you like your brain, you just like you race through it too quickly without critically thinking.
Like get reactive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do. I think it is reactive. Wait, what was the question? What are you asking me? I think this is a great question.
Yeah, you do? Okay. Is that what you think it is, that you're being reactive and that's why you have a challenge with technology a lot?
Well, I mean, if you know, there's that like that saying, like the way you do anything is the way you do everything. And I do get frustrated pretty quickly when things aren't going smoothly, like not always, but with technology for sure. I'm like, oh my God, because you know what's gonna happen? Someone's gonna walk up behind me and go, see, you're just bad at technology. And I'll be like, go, okay, that's fair. Maybe I'm just bad at technology, but maybe I'm just waiting to be told that I'm bad at technology. You know what I mean?
Right, I know what you mean.
So it's what's expected. Yeah.
I get it. Yeah, no, I get it. I feel like I'm in the same boat right now with relationships where I'm just, yeah. I think reactionary is like my word of the year right now.
Yeah.
Can you hear the crankiness in my voice? Fuck me.
Speaking, you know what I was, when we were speaking early and I heard your tone, I was like, uh-oh, Bridie, you got to turn this boat around. You can't both be super grumpy. Bridie, you got to cheer up. And so, so I'm just laughing at your crankiness.
Good. Yes, that helps. speaking of reactionary, there was some reaction to our episode last week, babe.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. People are. I kind of anticipated this a little bit, I think, but also I not quite in the words, I guess, that were used. But there's been some reaction to last week's episode where we revealed that you and I don't really have sex anymore. There's like people are like grieving our sex life.
Yeah.
What are some comments here? One was,
I'm very nervous. Like my heart feels like a little bit scared.
Well, I'll not mad here. I'll read one thing that came in, through the DMs. Hi guys, long time since the beginning listener and fan of Turn Me On. Listening to you guys has definitely helped to change and shape my approach to sex for the better. So thank you. I love the 2-part episode with Private Parts Unknown. You guys had such a fun and easy vibe together. Thanks for all the openness and honesty once again. Just had to tell you that it's totally weird, but I think I'm grieving your sexual relationship. Like, I know you two are happy, but I feel sad now that I know. Are any other listeners feeling this way? Safe drive, Bridie, and all my love to Bigby. I love you guys. It's stuff like that. I mean, we don't have to get into more, but like, there's this feeling of grief, I guess, I guess I understand to a degree. You know, it's like if you know, like two of your good friends break up, and you're like, oh, and you grieve that relationship. But like, we're still together, and we like love each other more than we ever have, and we're super happy. But there's like. I don't know. Maybe it's because we have like a quote unquote sex podcast that people are like you know sad what I think? That just we aren't. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. I hear what you're saying. Those are. I don't really know if I know what to say to that, but I guess my thought is too like. I guess my thought, what a funny thing to say. I guess my thought is, and then I have to wait, sit here and like try to think about my thought. I feel like this podcast is a direct result of, you know, us trying to work on our communication about sex. And this podcast became like a forum, like a useful forum to discuss a lot of the like, just to get comfortable. Not even discuss a lot of things that were affecting us, but just to get comfortable even, like, talking about it with each other. And I think, like, having people listen and having it be valuable to other people is extremely, it feels very purposeful.
Yeah, totally.
And so to me, I don't know if this is accurate. I'm just scratching my fingernails on the surface of, like, chakra work. But when I hear about people, especially coming up in these, like, next few episodes in our show, talking about how creative energy and sexual energy are so intertwined and so, like, it's super confusing to me still, and, like, you know, dangerous and probably, like, you know, like, I would imagine, like, a Buddhist take on what it is to, like, be, what's that word for, not celibacy, but, like, responsibility around your sexuality? That sort of, like, brahmacharya.
Oh, yeah, okay, from, like, a yogic sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and I feel like this podcast became how our sort of creative sexual energies came together. And, you know, like, it, yeah, just seems totally, like, we made this thing from our connection. And
right. This is our new sex.
It's, like, still so incredibly intimate. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. 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 I mean, that's sure. That's one way of looking at it. I'm sure there's someone hearing that going, that's fucking bullshit.
No, but remember, you know, when Peter Wilde was, like, acting is better than sex, like, that moment of, like, connecting with someone in performance it's better than anything. Yeah. Do you remember him saying that?
Yes, and for those people out there who don't know, Peter Wilde was an acting teacher that we had who truly is, like, a Canadian treasure. A very, very smart man. And, you know, when he was teaching us, he was probably 180 years old. He was basically Dumbledore to our theater school.
That's so true. Oh my God, he's totally that same archetype.
Yeah. And apparently Dumbledore was gay. Apparently Dumbledore is gay too.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of controversy about that. But yeah, Peter Wilde, he did say that, and he, you know, fuck, man,
I feel that when I know we're having a good show, like when we perform live together, I know that when, even in, like, in the recording studio sometimes, I'm just like, oh my God, I fucking love this person.
Yeah,
that this is how we connect.
Yeah.
That this is, like, what we produce. So,
and I think the other thing to, like, just keep in mind for anyone who feels, I don't know, like, slighted or, like, whatever those weird feelings are, now that you know that Brady and I don't have sex in the same bed, it doesn't change the fact that you've been listening for as long as you've been listening. And I can't speak for everyone, but the amount of people that have reached out to say, the conversations that you've had on the show have, like, fundamentally changed my life in terms of my intimacy with my partner, or how I view myself as a sexual being, or whatever. Like, those things don't change. Like, you're still listening to us because of the relationship that we have, not because of how many times my dick goes inside Bridie, or how many times, you know, that's not it. Like, that's not what. And I think the thing that I've taken away from all of that is that I think, you know, if you had asked me if we would be together, whatever, like 8, 6, 5 years ago, but us not having, like, a continuous sexual relationship, I would have been like, yeah, probably not. That wouldn't make any sense. But now I see it and I go, oh, yeah, wait, everything's not so black and white. Like, you know, like, relationships really are what you make of them. And there can be such incredible intimate beauty that can come from a romantic and loving partnership that doesn't have to involve sex.
Yeah.
I mean, mind you, I'm having plenty of sex elsewhere. like sex is still part of our lives.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's a good point. We talk about that lots with Esther Perel's work, and like, you know, it's you can't fulfill, you can't expect yourself or anybody else to fulfill 100% of anyone else's needs.
And it's not to say that
it's
also not to say that you and I will never have sex again. Like, that's, you know, that's not that's also not black and white.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing is ever guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of always taking it one day at a friggin' time, trying to follow some sort of deep compass within ourselves.
Yeah.
Road trip stuff.
So that happened this week. That was kind of interesting.
References.
I mean, it's probably obvious, but we're not together still. But you're in Canada now.
Wait, can you hear me?
I can hear you, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm in Canada. I just drove over the border today.
Amazing. Did you get a hard time going across the border?
No, it was so smooth.
Nice.
Yeah, it's always such a nice welcome home, the Canadian Border Patrol. They're,
yeah.
You know. Mm-hmm.
And you'll be home pretty soon, which is exciting.
Uh-huh. Home. I told you, I think I might not be home until after I go to PEI. I'm just trying to, we're rolling in like kind of right on the money, but I would love to, I would really like to get home first. Home is just something someone, a mutual friend of yours and I has brought up with me in a text message the other day. And I was like, oh yeah, home. Home is another one of those words I associate with the intimacy that your relationship is to me.
Me and you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You feel like home to me. You know that country song.
Yeah, I guess. Do I know that country song? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I do. Although, you know what? That, I feel like, I don't know, man. I feel like that's going to be a little bit different now that you, me, and Todd are all going to be living together. I think that we need to talk about how that's going to work.
We do, yeah. That's a good point.
Why don't you fill everyone in on what that's all about?
Oh, what? With Todd, all of us living together?
Since I was just kind of filled in about it last week.
No, okay, look, to be fair, we're coming home
but also,
2 months earlier than we expected. And Todd's apartment, you know, is rented by somebody else right now. And so we're going to live together. But there's also the van, which I've been living in for the last 3 months. So, you know what? If it gets too much for me, I have a place to go.
Fuck you. If it gets too much for me, dude, that's where I go.
Okay, I'm glad we had this talk.
We will most certainly be having this talk again. I was just picturing the other day of me waking up in the van, coming into the house to get coffee, just with my robe on, dick out, neighbors just looking out like, what the fuck is going on at that
house? Your circulation is not good enough to sleep in the van. It's gonna be, it's way too cold at nighttime in the winter. It's like, you don't want it to be minus 10. If it's minus 10, you can get away with it, minus 10 Celsius, but you got to start a fire in the morning if you want to be comfortable out there.
Well,
and at night.
Lucky for me, I like starting fires, so.
Me too.
Well, let's, do you want to hit a brain boner before we throw it to this week's episode? I got to say, before we do the brain boner, we're actually gearing up here to go into some recordings that, we're going into the recordings that made our trip to LA, like, truly what it was. Like, you know, the recordings that you've heard so far were amazing. They were great. Don't get me wrong. But the ones that are set up to come are like, they were conversations that truly, like, floored me. And especially because we were talking about a lot of subject matter that, like, oftentimes I would, you know, ingest to an extent, but, like, roll my eyes at. And fuck, man, I'm so excited for these episodes to hit because these next few guests are fucking awesome. But before we throw it to Eva and our conversation with her, do you want to hit a brain boner?
Yeah, sure. This is a great one. Okay. This one came in January 25th. Hello, here's a good one for you. Your recent episodes regarding libido made me think to ask you. My husband and I have been super happily married for 7.5 years, and we have always been extremely sex positive, communicative, and non-judgmental with each other. While I was recently pregnant, my husband's libido was completely gone. I wanted it all the time, and he wanted nothing to do with it. The second I popped that baby out, his libido came back, and with a vengeance. The birth of our child caused huge issues with PTSD from sexual trauma early in my life and postpartum depression, along with a completely different body from the pregnancy. Exactly a year later, I quit my cushy job and opened my own business for the sake of my mental health, but with owning a business comes a whole bunch of other stress. The issue we're having now is mismatched libidos. He wants it literally constantly. I myself can't even begin to think about it when I'm under intense stress. I've made a ton of progress. Therapy, meditation, exercise, nutritional changes, and just general personal development have helped get a lot of my drive back. But I still immediately drop any thoughts of being sexual in the moment I'm under stress. We talk about this constantly. My therapist thinks he needs to come to terms with the fact that things are just different now, and this is just the season of our lives for the moment. Sex drives will always fluctuate. We are open to adding a third, which we have done in the past, and have even discussed opening up the marriage for his sake, but he's less comfortable with that than I am. I guess my question is this: should he just come to terms with the fact that my libido will be waxing and waning throughout the rest of our lives, and it may never be the way it was before? Is that fair to him? Or is it unfair to deny him those wants and needs, even if I can't bring myself to do it? We've been circling back to this anytime we go more than a week without making fuck, and we're both so frustrated. Anyway, thanks for any advice you have. We've tried everything we can think of at this point. Love your show and everything you're doing. Feel free to use my name. Love, Dakota.
Oof. That's that's a big one. What do you think?
I think... it's, you know, when I started reading this, I was like, I don't have a baby. I, like, maybe I should phone a friend and ask advice on this one, because I know there's all kinds of stuff that happens after pregnancy that I have no, like, experience with. But on the subject of waxing and waning libidos, I feel like I have consistently encountered that in every relationship I've ever been in, and it's always frustrating. And, you know, like, always at the beginning of a relationship, for sometimes, like, quite an extended period of time, you can have this, like, honeymoon period sex, and then kind of, like, I don't know, have some sort of, like, negative association with it, like stress. So if you start fighting about it after it's been, like, a week and you haven't had sex, then you feel that on your back. You're like, oh my God, it's been a week. We're probably going to fight about this soon. And then you dry up. You're not going to be, you're not going to feel sexual when you know it, when it becomes all of a sudden, like, a ticking clock or, like, a shoe that's going to drop. You know, we're going to fight about this if we don't have sex soon. And that's stressful. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as much as it's like, I totally appreciate being fair and, you know, your partner seems like he's probably reasonable. Maybe you can just say, like, talk about, if that's the case, if that's where the stress comes from, then you can talk about that particular stress and then tools to manage for both of you to manage the stress of, like, I don't know, changing it, just like changing the habit, if it's become a habit.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I really, I don't know. I really don't know. Like, I don't know if it's just because I'm brain fried and like, and in, and like currently in such a like negative headspace, disastrous kind of like headspace with my current relationship, that I just like, I don't know what to offer, but I guess one thing I would say is like, when it comes to sex being an issue in between two partners, one, I think, like, really common pitfall is that subject matter being such a, like, daunting thing to approach or bring up in conversation. So when it does come up, there's already all this pressure behind it. And perhaps, like, finding a way to, like, really make that conversation as regular and, like, consistent as possible, like, to a degree of, like, day to day. But, like, from a really compassionate and gentle point of view. So, like, knowing if you're going to be bringing it up every single day, knowing that, like the language being used and the tone of which it's brought up is very much in check. And also maybe that the amount of time and, like, energy that gets put into it is also put in check.
Like being like, how's your libido today?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, casual,
yeah,
exactly. With no pressure.
Yeah, like over coffee, like over morning coffee every morning. It's like, all right, how are you today? How do you feel about it today? Has anything changed since yesterday? Do you feel anything different in your body today than you did yesterday? You know, and maybe in finding that sort of like regular, almost like brushing your teeth kind of routine in checking in together and like making that agreement, that maybe over time you'll just start to notice like that is the you thing know, to like plant the seed to be like, oh yeah, you know, maybe today I actually do feel like a little bit more of a connection, or maybe today I do feel a little bit more open to initiating the first move, or, you know, whatever that may be. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. That's really lovely. I think I had, I feel like we can throw this sort of to the episode that we're about to hear, because right at the end of this episode, and I wish that I had more time, you know, after she said this, to sort of dive in, we talked about, my train of thought is like so escaping me. I'm at the end of such a long traveled road, but God damn. It was somewhat decent.
Well, I mean, what do you want to just throw it to the episode so that Eva Clay can like kind of without even right. knowing offer up her two cents? Because I feel like you're right. Like what we are about to discuss is kind of like one of those like monumental conversation pieces about communicating about your desires, your wants, your needs. And mm-hmm. like finding ways to get those met with another partner with like deep compassion and patience. And mm-hmm. so, you know, maybe just let her kind of speak for
sum it all up.
Yeah, sum it all up in her way. Because I agree with you. Like it's like I said earlier, like this, I'm so excited for this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She talks at the end about like, you know, being with your partner to the brain boner, writer inner, Dakota. Maybe there's like a way of offering like, I'm not, my libido is low. Like, but maybe this is okay. Like cuddling is okay. Or maybe you can like, we can, you know, just like have different kinds of intimacy that are not about sex, but are connection, even so physically, a physical way that is like, but we agree that there's no pressure for it to be anything other than that, whatever.
Which, and you've voiced that a number of times too on the show, that that's a sort of tactic that, and I shouldn't say tactic, I don't mean tactic, but like that's a lane that you go down sometimes when you're not feeling like in the mood or whatever, is just offering up a different kind of way to form intimacy and then seeing what comes out of that. And sometimes it's just what it is, like a massage, or sometimes it leads to, you know, something sparking. I hope that helps, Dakota. And also, you know, sorry. I feel like you know, Brad, I feel like you and I just need to be in the same room again, to kind of spark up that magic that we have when we are together.
I feel it, babe. I feel it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I'm excited for this episode. Thank you all for tuning in for another week, and I think we can throw it right to it.
All right, cool. Hope you enjoy this week's episode. Eva Clay, you can find all of her stuff online. She will send you where to go in this conversation, and trust me, it's worth taking a look at what she's up to, because she is a very, very special human. she's one of those people that, like, I crush on a lot of people, but like this was like a deep, like past lives type crush. Like I was.
Do you know?
Just smitten.
Do you remember Kathleen, who wrote "Sex After Baby: Why There Is None"?
Yeah. It's very much like that.
I crush hard on that lady too.
Yeah.
They're very similar.
We hope you enjoy it. And hey, if you have a brain boner, or you just have a comment, or want to grieve about Brady and I's sex life, you can send us an email at turnmeonpodcast@gmail.com. And our booties are still going strong.
We can get you through this. That's right.
Butts are still going strong over on Instagram at turnmeonpodcast if you want to reach us there. And we love you all for your support. Thank you to all of our patrons. And without further ado, enjoy this week's episode with Eva Clay.
We're recording right now, aren't we?
Yeah, we are, yeah.
So I got turned on to your work from Jamie Walrab, who has been my voice coach from time to time. And so when I started like poking around on your Instagram and your website, which is amazing, by the way, I was like, oh, this... I probably don't even have to give you the prompt of what are three things that come to mind, because it seems like you're doing a lot of really powerful work out there in the world of Tantra. And I was like, this is 100% what I want to find out more about. I find the resources online for Tantra really confusing. Like it doesn't seem very clear on how to use it as a practice, not just like in intimacy and sexuality, but like, what is it? What's the difference between like tantric yoga or the practice of tantra in your lifestyle, I guess? This is the impression I'm getting. Please explain.
is tantra your jam? Like, is that your bread and butter?
Tantra is a tool.
Yeah.
Probably the primary tool and my favorite tool. But I do a lot of things in sexology. You know, I've been a sex therapist over 20 years, And so, you know, I love Tantra just as much as I love science. I'm a total science geek.
Right.
And can just, you know, jam on somatic science and neuroscience till the cows come home.
Love it.
But so am I understanding that your question to me is, what the fuck is Tantra?
Yeah, 100% my question.
Is it a bit of an oxymoron for someone to be like a lover of science, but also a lover of Tantra? You know, like, is that the same? Because I don't know much about Tantra. And I also do, I'm a huge fan of science, but I also really like value my yoga practice. Is it kind of one and the same?
There's a convergence.
Mm.
And it's really just how you language it, in my opinion, because I love both of these paths equally.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I am a former professor of neuroscience.
Are you really?
Well, yeah. Yeah. So
yeah, you're when Bridie mentioned your website being pretty badass, she was reading it on the drive. We were driving somewhere yesterday and she kind of like read off your website, and it's like extensive. Like you've had quite a career. It seems. So you've done work with Esther Perel.
Yeah, early on I did.
Very cool.
Yeah, because I'm a psychotherapist, and, you know, by training, and an academic. That's where I come from. And I always had a kind of secret spiritual life, secret sexual life, you know, living in a dual reality as an academic and professor and psychotherapist and all that kind of cool, nerdy stuff. And then on the side, I was going to sex parties and Burning Man and,
yeah, right.
And whatnot. And so... you're meeting me at a point in time where those paths have converged and everything is integrated. And so that's what you see on my website, is the whole of me.
It's a beautiful package. And what I mean by that is, Jeremy and I are both yoga teachers. We're both actors, or both have an acting background, and now we podcast, and also I work in film, and sometimes I'm waiting for that day where it all sort of makes sense, like all of the pieces.
It will.
And when I looked at your CV, I was like, this is someone, to me, it seems, who's followed their curiosity until, or, and continues probably to do so until it, like,
every
it
minute
takes shape.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh!
What put you on that path? Like, I guess, like, especially in terms of for our listeners and the topics that we mostly cover on our show, like, why sex? What was the, what drew you to becoming a sexologist?
It's all those planets in Scorpio, from what I'm told.
Are you a Scorpion? Scorpio?
Almost all my planets are in Scorpio and Capricorn. Mm. So, it makes me really ambitious and really sexual. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Is that a Capricorn thing?
Being yeah.
Really sexual?
No, very ambitious.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Capricorn.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. You're always climbing the ladder more, more, more.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. So to honor your question, what my path was, I was always just really interested in human sexuality and connection and intimacy. You know, I've heard people like Esther Perel or Dr. Ruth describe being very sexual as children, and not just sexual in their behavior, but in their curiosity. Like, oh, how, you know, how does this work, and how do animals do it, and what, you know, the kind of science of it. And I think it's, you know, I don't think, I'm sure it's a soul path. It's a soul calling. And there wasn't really like necessarily a pivotal moment for me where I decided to study sex. I did have a pretty racy personal experience that clarified my path, and maybe that would be fun to share that story
with
you.
Yeah,
that's
totally.
What you want.
Absolutely.
It's kind of racy, but you'll appreciate it, I'm sure. Yeah, I'd been a psychotherapist, licensed and practicing, really working in women's sexual wellness. Like, I worked for Planned Parenthood, and I ran a rape treatment clinic and a battered women's shelter, and like really working on the front lines of sexual wellness and trauma recovery. And I went through a divorce and decided that I would live a polyamorous lifestyle after that, really as an exploration and curiosity. And I went headlong into poly world, poly swinger, play party world, and, you know, sex and drugs, woohoo. It was really fun.
Woohoo indeed. Yeah.
Woohoo. and also being very active in the psychedelic world and psychedelic therapy. So, you know, that converged at a point. And after a couple of years of doing that, I had a spiritual awakening. And after one particularly rowdy weekend, I was kind of coming down off my drugs and went for a hike in the forest just to kind of rejuvenate. And I was struck. I was struck energetically by a being, and a voice appeared. And the voice was a female voice, and it very sternly said to me, "Stop it. This is not your path."
Huh.
And I suddenly had this realization, I had this felt sense of all of the traffic that I had been exposing my body to. And not in any moral sense that it's wrong to do that, but in the sense that my body was inundated with other people's energy, and it was clouding me. And it was so stern and clear, I went into a year of celibacy to understand.
Wow, this is, not to cut you off, but this is, you're the third person in the last 2 days who we've spoken to who have like dived into this idea of just a purposeful year of celibacy. And I'm, and yesterday I was questioning when we were speaking with Annabelle, I was like, I wonder, like, is this something that I should be thinking about? Like, it crossed my mind, because in my mind, I could never imagine the thought of taking a year off from being sexual or, you know, sexually connecting with somebody else. And now I'm sitting here, we're talking about like stars aligning, and
like, is this the voice?
I'm like, oh fuck, this is the voice. It's in the back of the van telling me right now. Sorry, but anyway, continue.
Yeah, so that year of celibacy was probably the best thing I ever did, because that's when I began to study Tantra.
Hmm.
And because I'd heard like, oh, in Tantra you don't orgasm or whatever, and I had, you know, these assumptions like a lot of us do about what Tantra is. And so I was very active in practicing and studying Tantra all the while I was not sexual. So I understood it from a lens of more of experiencing it in my own body and how sexual energy actually feels and how it runs and what is the nature of it in my reality. And I came out of that year a new person. And with a different sense of boundary and integrity over my body, and a better sense of discernment about what I really wanted as a sexual being. And so I became really fired up to teach it.
How did you relate to sex afterwards? Like you're going forward from that moment of coming out of that celibacy. What were those first sexual experiences like?
Incredible. And I love your question, like, how did sex change, or how did my relationship to sex change? And this just came to me. It went from being an experience of scintillation into an experience of the sacred.
Did you say scintillation?
Scintillation.
What is that word?
Scintillating. That it was a thrill.
Okay.
And I began to see how even all of that sex was a way of avoiding intimacy.
Right.
And that actually being present and in integrity with my body and sober in my body when I make love. Because, you know, from then on, I implemented a policy of like only sobriety for lovemaking, which was a total 180 from what I had been doing. Like all of this, like, you know, LSD and sex mushrooms and sex and MDMA and sex. And I was like, no, only sobriety. And it was actually way more exciting and fulfilling and nourishing. And I began to see sex as a food, as a nutrient. And the ride that I had been on, that ride of scintillation, of like thrill seeking and novelty and intensity, blew out my circuits. And I had to like do the year to reset my metabolism, my sexual metabolism. Mm. And so when I re-entered it, even just the slightest, I want to touch you, even just the slightest sort of hovering of someone's hand over my skin, or the way that we would breathe together, or the tiniest tickle would send me to orgasm.
It really, like what you're saying right now, very much reminds me of this quote that, I mean, you've recited countless times throughout the podcast. I believe it was Esther Perel who says, sex is not a thing that you do, it's a place that you go.
Yes.
And like, that sounds like you are going to a place.
Yes.
You know?
Blast off.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas before, like with the scintillating, did I get that? Mm-hmm. Scintillating, I gotta add that to my pocket. I like that word. The scintillating experience seems like it was more of a thing that you were just doing. And then after coming out of, like after that year of, you know, a hiatus, and then coming back to it with new, fresh eyes, it's all of a sudden this place that you're going. Like it
became a prayer. It became my religion.
Mm. What were you in the world of sexology at that point? Or was it like, how long ago was this? What?
This is 10 years ago, 12 years ago.
Okay.
Was I in the world of sexology? I was in the world of Western psychology.
Right.
I was also a very spiritual being and very alternative, but that was like, again, separate. And I was still, because I was in academia, so I was like, you know, playing by the book, coloring inside the lines in terms of my clinical practice. And so I was sex positive, but I hadn't connected with Tantra. You know, I was a yogi and loved yoga. I've always loved yoga, but I just hadn't connected with it. It wasn't time on my path. And then it became time, and it came up strongly, and this is my path now. And so I have all the clinical background still that I use and I jam on, but I lead with this knowing that sex is sacred and that we're only using a fraction of our capacity when it comes to experiencing pleasure, experiencing exalted states where we actually feel the divine.
Mm.
And it's even hard to put into words. It's trying to tell someone what it's like to trip on acid. Like,
yeah,
there are no words, but we are only operating at a fraction of our potential.
Mm.
And in terms of intimacy and the way that we experience our lovers or the other, whatever that means to you, is there's such a deeper chamber that we can enter together. Like, we enter the temple together. And that's primarily what I love Tantra for, is that it rewired my attachment system, my attachment style. I went from avoidant attachment, which is what all the sex was about.
Right.
Paradoxically, to being really a healthy, adjusted attachment style.
Turn Me On. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsors.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
How did you start to explore the practice of Tantra? Like, where did you start?
I wandered into a class.
Yeah, right. Okay.
With Salma Isadora, God bless her soul. I met a guy at Bhakti Fest, which is a yoga festival here in California, and he invited me into a Tantra class one day, and I walked in and I said, fuck yes, this is it. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. This is amazing. Like, it's the first time I'd ever heard anyone use these two words in one sentence, sacred and sex. Mm-hmm. To me, there had been a split before. So it just, I started working with other Tantra teachers, and you know, it led me to my primary Tantra teacher for the last decade, whom I love and adore and I've studied with. And it just, yeah, pulled up this whole world. You know, sometimes you discover something and you're like, oh, that's a thing.
Mm.
Oh, wow, that's a whole world. And you weave into it.
Did this happen during your year of celibacy, or was this?
Yes.
Okay. I sort of similar, I guess, to Jeremy's question. I'm curious for myself and for our listeners, in that year, how did you dig into this? How did this transformation, I'm sure, didn't happen overnight, and that from that one Tantra class, you said you were, it sounded like, investigating and processing and looking and searching. And what were the resources you used, and like what guideposts on your path were there?
Yeah, I call them breadcrumbs, you know, when spirit guides you down a path. And I'm very blessed to live in Southern California, where there's a lot of everything going on. Mm-hmm. And so there, you know, and in Santa Monica, I think there are more yoga studios per capita than anywhere else in the world.
Is that a fact?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That doesn't really surprise me. I guess it makes sense.
Where else in the world are there more yoga studios? Nowhere. There's nowhere. So I'm very blessed in that regard. And so there are a lot of resources available to me here. And I just started pulling threads. And, you know, there's a global Tantra community and many different sects and schools of Tantra, just like yoga. There are many branches of Tantra. And mostly I followed my curiosity and followed the signs. And follow the people. So a beautiful thing about practicing Tantra is that it's done in an embodied way. So you're in person and you're interfacing with lots of different people. Mm. So like such as a tantric puja, where you're interfacing with everybody in the class, anywhere from 10 to 100 people in one, one class, one workshop. So I started to meet all kinds of people who had a shared interest. And the other beautiful thing about that in the Tantra kind of paradigm is that you get to enter a sink, a limbic sink, with many different people in one sitting. So for example, I spend 2 minutes or 5 minutes with one person, then you move on, then you move on, then you move on. This is the puja style. And it's the ultimate polyamory to me.
What are you doing? Like, what is the, you know, like it's not an asana, right? You're not, it's not, it is so it just like a connection, like through eye contact?
And, that's one part.
Eye gazing.
Eye gazing is the famous one. And because I love science, I'll drop a little.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That Tantra, essentially, if you know, to explain it in a medical model, are a series of exercises, poses, and activities that allow two or more people to enter a nervous system sink.
Mm, okay.
So where you're firing mirror neurons and lighting up your dopamine reward circuits. And so it creates incentive to do more of that. And when we enter that deep state of bonding with another person, you know, the brain releases oxytocin and adrenaline and all these like feel good neurohormones and endorphins. And so when you're doing that repeatedly with several different partners in one night, like I said, it's the ultimate polyamory, and yet you're not even touching.
Right. Is this like this? Is the objective to stimulate like a parasympathetic nervous system response, or is it more, or is it, it can be both. It's like sympathetic and parasympathetic.
It can be both. And right. it always is both. And, because you need both sides to feel aroused.
Right. Sure.
So you need to be relaxed and excited at the same time. You don't just want to like fall asleep and go vegetative on your partner. So it's a little bit of both. But certainly it's down-regulating. You know, if you've ever eye gazed, for you or your listeners in this podcast, eye gaze with someone for long enough, it takes about 20 seconds minimum and up to 1 minute of eye gazing. And then your brain will enter an involuntary sync. So this is autonomic in the body, meaning we're not really in strong regulation over it, like blinking. And nature has us wired this way so that we bond and stay in tribal units.
Mm.
So when that happens, then all the feel-good hormones start to surge, the oxytocin, etc., and you feel super blissed out.
Yeah.
So you're getting high off of connection. And this is why I don't do drugs with sex anymore. is because I realized I'm really missing out on the best high available that's already circulating in my body. Mm-hmm. There's no come down, no hangover, no side effects. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's actually really so good for your nervous system and your immunity and your brain. And, you know, like it just, it's like the ultimate superfood. It just juices your intelligence and everything about you. So I'm like, fuck, I'm going to like get smarter by doing this and I'm going to be happier and I'm going to look younger and I'm going to lose weight faster, whatever. It's like a multivitamin.
The cure-all, yeah.
It really is.
Do you find it's similar to drugs in that, like, because I've done eye gazing exercises before, in particular, like during theater school.
Theater school and a lot of like breathing, like back to back breathing. Yeah. Like,
but the one thing I remember from that one particular exercise, I was sitting across from
Virgilia,
a woman in my class named Virgilia. And I'd never sat and like stared into someone's eyes for any extended period of time in my entire life up to this point. And I'm sitting with Virgilia and I know Virgilia pretty well. You know, it's a small class of 20. We've been spending 48 to 50 hours a week together for the last like 2.5 years. And we sit down and I'm staring into her eyes and it was so overwhelming, similar to like the first time I've ever gotten really high off some sort, like, you know, my first foray into psychedelics, where it's like it's almost too much and I'm not ready. Maybe I'm not ready for the dose that I just took, and part of me is like wanting to pull back, wanting to escape because it's so intense. And I remember just bawling, like just weeping, and her weeping back. Holy fuck, even just talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. Even just talking about it just like brings me back to that moment. It was so intense. I had a question there. I think my question was, have you in this practice and being a part of this, in this practice, have you seen that type of response to people who are sort of new to Tantra, where they're like, what the fuck is going on?
And just to piggyback on that, what's the brain science on that?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So to answer your question, yes, all the time.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, thank you for making a beautiful case for Tantra. You know, I can see the emotion welling up in your eyes now, even remembering that experience. And to tie in the brain science, you know, we're living in a world, obviously, we're all feeling disconnected. Like we are losing our opportunities to bond and to connect and to reflect and mirror each other, which is essential for our well-being and for the whole fabric of our tribal existence. We're tribal beings and we're losing that. So when we come into an environment where we're eye gazing, and granted Tantra is a lot of other things in addition to eye gazing,
sure,
but
of course.
And your nervous system is not titrated to that yet. We're not accustomed to walking around staring people in the eye or breathing together or necessarily touching even, especially in LA. You know, we don't have subways and such where we're bumping up against other bodies. We're in our cars. It can really flood the nervous system. And so you're offering an example where sympathetic and parasympathetic both get activated at the same time, because it's both really scary to do that and blissful. And so certainly people break down, there are tears, there are breakthroughs, there are meltdowns. And that's kind of a threshold that one would pass through. And on the other side of that threshold, it's just bliss. And the science around that is, you know, I think what I just saw you experience, where you welled up remembering, is that that created a kind of bookmark in your nervous system.
Yeah.
And the body remembers that on a cellular level. The intensity of that experience. And yet you'll find that it can get sort of like addicting in a good way, like yoga. Like suddenly you want to go every day and you're like, oh, I want to feel that good, because your body craves it. It's like a nutrient you're missing and you don't even know you're missing it. The analogy I run to that is sometimes, do you ever take a drink of water and then suddenly you realize how thirsty and dehydrated you are? And then you're gulp, gulp, guzzling, guzzling, gulp. That's what Tantra is often like.
Interesting. Huh.
Yeah.
Something that has come up for me while you're speaking about this is, so I've also been in circles with people in our class and connecting in that way. And then I've participated drop-in like voice classes with Jamie, where it's like you're also getting very up close and personal and in people's energetic space and like putting your hands on people sometimes. And the fear of someone, no, I'm going to well up, of someone who you are trying to open yourself across from, the fear of them taking too much. I don't even know what that means exactly, but it is the same thing. It's the same fear physically, since the sensations of it, of making eye contact for too long on the street with someone who's passing by. What are they going to get the wrong impression? Are they going to take advantage of my openness? Can you speak to that fear? Because I'm sure that must be common as well, especially for women.
Definitely. And again, we've been acculturated out of many very natural and human modes of contact. Mm. And it's really all about context. So when you're walking along the street and you're staring intently at someone, it may not be an appropriate social cue, mm-hmm. depending on the culture, such as if you're in Asia, it's very inappropriate to make direct eye contact. If you're in California, it's very appropriate when you're ordering your Starbucks at the counter to like gaze lovingly into the eye of your barista. And so, yeah. You know, within the auspices of Tantra, you know, everyone is gathered for the same reason, and is to learn how to connect with themselves, with God and the other. And so in terms of boundary, which is what I hear your question being,
yeah.
What I've learned in Tantra is that we really have command over our energetic centers. And so this is a very subtle art, okay? But that when you're standing across from someone, you can begin to discern with so much precision and clarity what they're after, what they're offering, and what they're looking for. And instead of simply turning away from that person or shutting down or labeling them, castigating them, just offer something different in a different way. So you can feel when a man is trying to connect with you with his cock, mm-hmm. with his sexual center. You can just feel that, right? You can mm-hmm. sense it. So my response to that would be, not available. Mm. But this is what is. I'm pointing at my heart right now. So you can shine your heart light into this being. And it's absolutely miraculous to see how your partner will shift depending on the energy you're offering them and where you're open and where you're closed. Mm. So there's this subtle energetic interplay that you begin to become aware of. It's like growing eyes in new places in your consciousness that you can see and discern things at a finer level and enter that into lovemaking. Mm. Wow.
We did an exercise in acting school led by our teacher, Cynthia Ashberger, and she was a mindfulness. She was always training herself in mindfulness and in her Buddhist practice too, I believe. And she had us do this acting exercise. Just, you know, I was a little older in the class, but, you know, think about a bunch of 18-year-olds doing this exercise where they stand across from each other and all you're allowed to say is, I'm expanding or I'm contracting. And it's
awesome.
Just tuning in to
that. That's so Tantra.
That yeah. opening and that closing. And I have only just started to use it in my relationship with my boyfriend where I'm like, I'm contracting in whether it's sexually or in argument or whatever. And thankfully, even though he's doesn't have the same background as us, maybe it's because he's a Scorpio, he seems to really get that when I'm like, I'm contracting, and so this does not feel comfortable. That touch does not feel comfortable right now, even though it might on a different day, it might totally make me expand. But right now, I'm closed and I'm closing tighter. And I get confused with the boundary thing from time to time, but I think that's been a really useful practice to me, and something that I think is pretty accessible to the average person off who has no theater training or no yoga training, you know, to even notice that feeling of, oh, I'm actually opening and softening and landing, or whatever the verbs are that resonate, or I'm closing, I'm retreating, I'm contracting.
Great. So then take that a step deeper. And this would be offered as an invitation to the two of you and anyone who's listening to understand that normally we don't close all the way as a whole being or open all the way as a whole being, but we open and close in different parts of our being. So you could even say, my heart is opening to you, but my mind is closing because I'm thinking of something else.
I'm feeling defensive. Would that be a closing? And like my brain, my thoughts are all about how much I don't like you in this moment, but I'm trying so hard to soften my heart.
Mm-hmm. Or my pussy's open to you in this moment, but not my heart.
Mm.
Or my heart and not my pussy. So you can think of yourself as a whole bodied person, and parts of you may, usually this is how we do intimacy, that there are parts of us that want to connect and parts of us that do not, and parts of us that are curious but not sure. So we naturally contain a whole lot of ambivalence as human beings about connection. And most of the time we're lying about it. We're saying we're all the way open, but we're not. Or I'm closed, but we're not. So we can begin to become even more specified in our openings and closings.
I like that.
What does your day-to-day practice look like? you're going to cross the border into Canada, and TSA is like, what do you do for a living? Like, what do you do right now?
Yeah, that's funny. I keep meaning to do a video on like, and my average day, it's so fucking cool. I have like the best life. even like today, I'll give you an example. I just talk about sex all day.
Right.
And so I see private clients for sex. Sex therapy, sex coaching. I don't really like to call it sex therapy because that implies there's a problem, but really sexuality coaching. So I help women have orgasms. I help couples have juicy sex lives, and it's just so fun. And then I write, I create, I use my thoughts and ideas and put them out into the world. I make videos, I speak into things. This week I filmed a TV spot in Hollywood because I live in LA, and you know, why not? It's all here. And then I come and do a podcast, and then I go for a walk on the beach, and definitely do a lot of yoga and a lot of Kundalini yoga. Mm. And I study relentlessly every day. I have like my learning hour where I read and I study and I keep sharpening my skills and my knowledge, because what I do is not just a knowledge based application. It takes a lot of skill to do what I do. So I'm always growing.
Where do you find your clientele? Like, or how do they find you?
Yeah. They find me on social media. They find me word of mouth. They come from a lot of different places.
Or yeah. maybe I'll spin that question a little bit differently. What, who, you know, speaking of, couples as clients to like give them a, you know, more juicy sex life. Are those couples, I'm sure it's different for everyone, but like are as an example of those couples, like people that are having, people that are having issues or problems in their sex life, or people that are just, things are great, but they know things could be better. So why not go see Eva?
Yeah, really both. It's funny you mention that, because I have couples that are coming this afternoon to work with me, and they're like, we've been together 8 months. Our sex is amazing. The best sexual part I've ever had, but we want to keep it that way.
Mm.
So hallelujah. You know, we need more of that in the world. I also see couples where they haven't had sex in 20 years or he has erectile dysfunction or she has severe sexual trauma. This is the most common thing I work with, and it drives me fucking crazy. Women over 40 who have never had an orgasm. Mm. The reason it drives me crazy is because how prevalent this really is and how easy their solution is, but yet it's not readily available to them. So they come in feeling broken and defective. So I, you know, greatly endeavor to correct that, not just at the level of my clients, but at the global level, really is sex education. That's probably my first passion.
How do you manage? We get a lot of part of our show is people write in with questions, and we offer very non-professional advice from a friend. Like that's you know that's where we're coming
from. Good disclaimer.
Yeah, that's good. But we've had a number of people write in who have talked about just that, like females or persons with vulva who write in and say, "I've never had an orgasm," or "I can't orgasm
with a partner."
I've never had an orgasm with a partner. Like I can make myself come, but no one's ever made me come. And I mean, our response to that is always, I'm always like, I don't know. I don't know what to do. And Brad, you speak pretty eloquently to that subject, I think, when we hit those questions. But what are some of the tools that you typically use when a client comes in and that's one of their primary issues or one of their primary concerns?
So if you're a woman that has never had an orgasm, the first and most important thing to know is that there's nothing wrong with you. Mm-hmm. When women fall under the belief, and this is largely ingrained by our society, by media, and by men who just lack the education, that are their sexual partners, I should say, but mostly of the male persuasion, that when they're under the belief that they're broken, it makes it very difficult to experience an orgasm from that state of being, from that state of consciousness. Women are so intrinsically connected with their genitals. It's like our whole consciousness is pulsing there, is alive there in the vulva, the pussy. And when we see her as gross, dysfunctional, broken, disgusting, dead, or whatever it is, a lot of women see this as, we can't innervate properly. We can't innervate. So like
what's innervate? God, I'm just getting so many good words today. This is great.
Stay tuned. We're going to hear the words innervate and what is it? Scintillating?
Scintillating.
We're going to be hearing this a lot over the next few months.
Yeah, I'm going to be spewing
that. That makes me so happy. Good. Yes, learn. So innervate. So it means our nerve pathways. And in order for a woman to have climax, and granted, there are different kinds of climax, I'm sure, as you know. There's the masculine climax, and then there's the feminine orgasm. But in order for a woman to reach her full peak pleasure potential, we'll call it, she needs to have the nerve pathways between her genitals and her brain to be functional so that it can send signal. So when we're numb and we shut down, either there's trauma or whatever is happening in the body, a woman will often autonomically shut down that signal so that she literally can't feel sensations in her vulva. And then, of course, the brain interprets the sensation. So if she has trauma or other kinds of programming, which most of us do, she might interpret sensation, touch, or arousal as being bad.
Right.
So the brain will not categorize it as a good thing.
Is that what leads to like vulvodynia or like
often
vaginismus, like those types of things?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So we have to rewrite the script inside the body and inside the brain so that she begins to recognize sensation. I use herself. So you have no idea how many times a week I guide women in self-pleasuring. And wow, we do this virtually over, you know, video chat. And they just turn off their video and I'm guiding them at home in self-pleasure.
Whoa.
And I just hear so many women orgasm for the first time. And it's like the best thing ever.
Oh,
yes.
My gosh. Yes.
You do have the coolest job.
I do.
You're like an orgasm doula.
I am an orgasm doula.
Yeah, the orgasm doula. That's great.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing. Yeah, for sure. So we get those their circuits turned on and get them reinterpreting, you know, interpreting sensation in a new way.
Okay. The other, another, you know, common, really common question we get from people is that they have a libido, but their partner doesn't, or their partner has a wild libido and they don't, and is the only option to have other partners and questions like that. And libido to me, I think I went on a bit of a nervous breakdown about it the other day.
We went on a bit of a rant on the show
about like what is this? Is it libido? It seems sometimes it feels like shackles, this term, this idea of libido. And is it a thing that does exist and that you could have?
Like, are you asking, is libido a construct?
Yeah, essentially.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a great question.
That's a great question, Jeremy. That's my question.
It sounds like a pretty legit medical term, libido, you know? But I don't fucking know.
I do.
All right. Leave it to the orgasm doula.
Libido. It's a great mystery.
Mm.
You know, it's an art and a science. And I think the word libido really comes from a Western medical model, which operates mostly on hormones. You know, so when a couple is disconcordant, as we call it, like one has a higher libido than the other, we also have to look at, I'm going to sound like a therapist right now, but you have to look at the whole context of the person in their context and the whole kind of pie of their life to look at, what are they eating? You know, are they eating crap that's loaded with artificial hormones and synthetic preservatives and et cetera, that's suppressing their testosterone or their estrogen or whatever. Their testosterone really is what's responsible for libido. Do they have trauma? What's unspoken in the relationship? What are the withholds in their communication? This is, in my experience, the most common shutdown of women's desire for sex, is unresolved issues in the relationship. And it tends to deposit inside the woman's body, not the man's, more commonly. I'm speaking very gender normative here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just what it is. So, because women are the repository, we store the dynamics of the relationship. And so most commonly what I see in my practice is a couple who comes in and the woman has lost her desire for sex. And to me, it's just a microcosm of a larger issue going on in the relationship. And we have to unwind that. And it was Esther Perel who said one of my favorite quotes of all time is so useful. She said, "It's not that women lose desire for sex. They lose desire for the sex they believe is possible."
Huh.
Why?
Because they're fucking bored. Because their partner isn't attuning with them. Their orgasm doesn't come first. Their pleasure is not the priority. Their safety is not the priority, etc. These are all the reasons that I hear.
So just to clarify, do you mean that they lose the desire for the sex that's essentially like sitting across the room from them? Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah. They lose desire for the sex that's available to them.
Mm.
So meaning they're having sex, this is my interpretation, okay, and what I see anecdotally, but they're having sex in the patriarchal fashion.
Can this be viewed in the inverse? We also get oftentimes we'll get like an email from a couple where it's the man who seems to have like lost his libido, but the woman is like, I'm so horny and so ready to like make love to my partner, And whenever we do, it's incredible, but he's barely there to make it happen. Like, actually, I think we literally
we just talked
about that. Like,
certainly.
Written in.
Yeah,
and
certainly.
Is it sort of this? Is it
different dynamics in my, again, in my experience?
Sure.
The first thing I look at, and this is not going to be a popular response.
Oh,
he agrees.
Say it
He's
anyway.
He's already pissed off. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not generalizing. I'm not saying this is true in every regard, but it's very common in my practice that if the man has lost his desire for sex, he's most likely engaging in a lot of porn.
Right. A lot of porn? Yeah, right. Right.
Also for men, more often there's a testosterone disturbance, so they're low in testosterone, like I mentioned, high-stress lifestyle.
Mm.
I hear this a lot. Like, he's so busy with work. All he does is work. I don't get the attention that I need. He doesn't even want to make love when he comes home.
He's too tired.
He's so stressed. There's much cortisol in the body that's also a testosterone disruptor. Another big reason is, you know, this is maybe more psychodynamic in its orientation, but men thrive on challenge and they thrive on novelty.
Big. Yep.
Challenge.
I can relate to that.
And novelty. So, yeah. And this is testosterone in effect.
Mm.
And so, depending on the relationship, if he's lost that in his partnership, you know, a sense of novelty that they're expanding and exploring new ways of making love and new ways of having pleasure, or she's no longer a challenge to him.
Mm-hmm.
Or his life is no longer a challenge to him. You know, he's getting on the 405 freeway and commuting 2 hours to work every day and sitting at his cubicle at a desk and coming home. So, like, if his life is not invigorating to him, men, more so than women in this regard, will lose their libido, shut down.
Mm.
So he needs to be challenged. You know, so sometimes I'll send clients, like, you need to go climb a mountain. You need to go join a basketball team. You need to, like, go be with a pack of men and reconnect with your animal and go get a hormone panel.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I feel like one of the sort of, like, cure-all sort of suggestions that I've always kind of come across or read or heard of when people are like, oh, like, my sex life is kind of suffering, is people, you know, like, work out. Like, find a, like, are you living an active lifestyle? Because if you're not, that's most certainly going to take a toll on your sex life. Mm-hmm. And whenever I feel that, like, whenever I've gone through that, whenever I have that sense that my sex or my desire to have sex is, like, waning, I oftentimes will reflect and go, oh, fuck yeah, but you've been sedentary as hell over the last, like, month, you know, like, mm-hmm. recovering from a pneumonia or something, and then taking 3 weeks to try to bounce back, but really just laying around. And it always tends to be those times where my desire for sex is the lowest.
Yeah.
And then finding, you know, getting back into some sort of routine, it's like,
yeah.
Whew.
Doesn't it seem like that really is the primary problem of our existence is stress and a sedentary lifestyle.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And people don't like to hear that.
No.
When they come into the office, they want me to wave the magic wand. They want the new sex toy, the new sex trick or whatever. I'm like, get off your ass.
Yeah. Or they hear it and they go,
turn the game off and go outside.
Then, then they just don't do anything about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's
well, same with everything. It's
yeah.
like, you're not feeling so well. Then what are you eating?
Yeah.
How are you moving your body?
Yeah.
Are you getting fresh air into your lungs? Yeah.
Good sex requires taking good care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like acting, you know? It's your body is your tool.
Yeah. Do you mind if we close that?
No, yeah. No. Yeah, yeah.
I got it. It's a bit of a slidey. It's got a little chilly all of a sudden.
Yeah, yeah. I can close that one too if you like. We're coming up to time here. Was there anything that you wanted to
I could talk to you all day. Yeah, I mean, like, neuroscience, I've got the brain that heals itself back there. On my last road trip, I read his first book, The Brain That Changes Itself. I'm, like, such a geek for learning that. Not, like, I don't want to be a doctor or anything, but as a hobby, it's a
big interest of mine. And you know, I guess I think we got a ton. I already have a ton out of this conversation, but if we were going to talk all day, I'd be like, you know,
you want the science.
Yeah, I want the science. So and you know,
what's sapiosexual? I mean, some.
So yeah, someone who gets off on smarts,
intelligence.
Yes.
Big time.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll just ask you if there's anything you think that.
Is there a word sapiosexual? So sapiosexual is like getting off on intelligence. Is there one for humor?
We could make it.
Yeah. We could make one.
That's a big one for me.
Because I think I'm that.
Yeah?
Yeah. When I meet a really funny gal.
That's it.
Does it. Yeah. Let me see if I know any jokes.
That does it.
Just kidding. Well, when you think of that word, let me know.
I'll have to chew on that one. Yeah. Sorry, I cut you off there.
Is there anything you think we should cover or touch on to cap off this or to bring us to a close?
How do people find you? Like, one thing that we're from Canada. Bridie's in the middle of, you know, traveling across the continent. And a lot of our listeners are up in Canada, but you've also mentioned that like some of your work is online
The majority of my work is online. So
sweet. How do people get involved or see what you're up to?
EvaClay.com. And I have two different online courses that I run every year. And then some things I do in person, retreats and whatnot. So I really have a global audience, work internationally. So it's easy to find me and come on board. You know, my group programs are for women and my online courses are for women around orgasm and pleasure and relating to men, you know, seducing men. I love this sacred seduction is my new thing. I love it so much.
Cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
I'm putting sacred in front of all of my conversations about sex from now on. Yeah.
Well, Eva, this is it's been such a pleasure to sit down in the van and shoot the shit with you. I knew, again, yesterday when we were kind of reading your website, which is really a really well done website. Like, your website's good. Do you do it yourself?
I had a designer. Who just got me.
It's a great website.
Yeah.
But I knew that this was going to be a pretty eye-opening and kind of like highlight conversation for this trip that we're on. So, and it most certainly didn't disappoint. So thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for spreading the good word.
Yeah. And thank you all so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. As always, we'll be back next week with another fascinating episode. Gonna be fucking tough to top this one though. while you wait for that, in the meantime, head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and a review and hit the subscribe button and tell three of your closest friends to do the exact same thing. It only takes a second. Mm-hmm. And then while you're over there, you're on a computer or you're on a phone, you might as well pop over to patreon.com/turnmeon and support us with your hard-earned cash. This trip to LA, where we're having these wonderful conversations like we're having right now, wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for the support that we've had on Patreon. So to everybody who is... become a patron or has been a patron or is currently a patron, we love you. And for everyone who's been thinking about it, we don't love you as much, but we will for sure start loving you real hard once you head on over there and hit that subscribe button.
And you can reach out to us at turnmeonpodcast@gmail.com or right through our website, turnmeonpodcast.com. We'd love to hear from you. That's all for this week.
Until next week,
go fuck yourself.
Acast powers some of the world's best podcasts. Here's a show we recommend.
Hey friends, I'm Shen.
And I'm Lei.
And we're the hosts of the Walde Nap podcast. We're two new moms trying to navigate our way through motherhood. So let's talk about it.
Grab a coffee, a glass of wine, or something a little stronger. We won't judge while we unpack, unwind, and discuss how we deal with parenting, relationships, and adulthood without any filters.
All Walde Nap, of course. So check us out now on all streaming platforms.
Acast recommends.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.